It's time for Cutting Edge Consciousness with Freeman Michaels and Barnett Bain. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
Good morning. This is Freeman Michaels here at the edge of possibility with my co-host, Barnett Bain.
It is Freeman Michaels here at the edge of possibility, along with Barnett Bain. You did, but we're crowding. We're crowding the edge of possibility.
Oh, that's right. All right. We're pushing the edges.
Fortunately, there's a lot of us here at the edge of possibility now, and that's a really good thing. So it's great to be here with you this morning. Nice to see our crack engineer and producer, Spence.
Always an attaboy to Spence. And, I was thinking
playing
about...
Playing Angry Birds, or what are you doing over there, Spence?
I was thinking about something this morning.
You were.
I know, that's novel.
I was feeling about something.
Yes, that's much wiser, just to be feeling about it. Based on the guest who will be joining us shortly, yeah. I was thinking about the conversation we had with Tom Spence. And not Tom Spence.
Tom Spence, Tom Spence, our crack engineer.
Tom Bunzel.
Angry Birds.
No, Tom Bunzel, the guy that came and talked to us about social media. But if you remember this conversation, the chapter of his book, most of his book was like barely interesting to us because we both are befuddled in that category.
Yeah, we're going to get a call from Tom's.
Yes, I know. But less befuddled.
Tom, we've
less
apologized
befuddled.
For that.
No, less befuddled thanks to Tom and his amazing book.
Yeah.
But the last chapter blew both of us away.
Yes.
And it was the way that he was using technology as a way of illustrating a kind of. Some shifts, some paradigm shifts in the way.
Say more about that.
Well, I'm working on it. I'm working up to it. He was talking about how the social media was matching up with various aspects of the, dare I say, collective experience. The collective experience as reflections of our individual experience multiplied out. Right?
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Whatever you're talking about.
Whatever I'm talking about. And how that these threads of where it was reflecting back paradigm shifts and how people were communicating in different ways, and there was a bit of metaphor in that, and I thought that would be an interesting way to start today.
That was nice.
Maybe not, but I just figured I'd try to line that up a little for you, Burnett.
So, thank you. That's clear as mud. I won't be drinking that.
Talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Fortunately for us, we have a really, really good friend on who can make that murky cup of soup clear. Who can bring some clarity to that. Because I didn't even know what I didn't know before we started the show. But now it's pretty clear that I even know less than what I didn't know.
Oh, boy.
So let's just jump right in here.
Go ahead.
We have our very good friend, Mari Smith, on the line with us. Mari is a social media expert. Actually, Mari is known as the Pied Piper of Facebook. And since you, Freeman, are the Pied Piper of the photo booth,
right?
There we'll have a lot of Pied Pipers
That's
in the room.
Right.
I'm the Pied Piper of the Postal Service. That's where I need to get back. I need to get into the current conversation. Mari's the author of this incredible book that I have right here in front of me called The New Relationship Marketing, How to Build a Large, Loyal, Profitable Network Using the Social Web by Mari Smith. And she is one of the top 10 most influential small business people on Twitter. And she's also my friend, which is a good thing.
Fantastic.
So that's
all of that fits together. Unlike what I was trying to talk about this morning, that actually fits together.
I just like to make it real.
Yeah, keep it real.
Mari, how are you?
I am outstanding. Greetings and good morning. How are you?
Greetings. It's nice to have you. I promised Freeman that I wouldn't do my lame Scottish accent.
But he breaks his promises all the time.
Once in a while,
Stick with it. So, Mari, listen, I wanted to bring you on and draw some correlation between how, and you don't have to stay with me on this.
Whatever he was trying to say.
No, I'm going to try to save it. Give me a chance here.
You can do it.
That there's a new way of relating where We've seen revolutions in countries based on Facebook. We've seen consciousness, the ideas moving at a rate that in my mind they never have before in human history. And I see this as a sign of the times from a consciousness perspective. Maybe you share that view with me, and maybe you don't, but I figured I'd throw it out there.
I do.
Oh, see there, Barnett! Saved.
1,000% agree. You know what? It's interesting because I was so looking forward to this interview today and this whole conversation about the new consciousness and where we are heading collectively as a human race. And it's really, quite frankly, not that many audiences that I can get kind of a little more esoteric and woo-woo. I use that term loosely. We're in Southern California, so that's okay. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I believe
it's very mainstream on this show.
You're very mainstream. The more woo-woo, the better.
Woo-woo is conservative here.
I feel right at home. But honestly, I love that you brought this up because I totally, totally think that, I believe that as a human race, collectively, we all co-created Facebook and we nominated Mark Zuckerberg to be the leader because he's perfect for it. He's perfect. He's a thick-skinned maverick, but he's brilliant and he's forcing us to be more open and connected is what he wants us to be, excuse me, sharing more of our inner world, being more vulnerable, more real with each other. And it absolutely is causing revolutions, as you say, entire countries, you know, dictator leadership toppling over and people being kinder to one another. And there's been more family reunions and school reunions than ever before, people finding their adoptive parents or children to adopt. And It's a whole new world, so, and I really think we've co-created it.
And so it is, now I'm going to be really bold, it is a spiritual imperative that we become as adept at working with this incredible technology as possible.
Yes.
It's a spiritual imperative.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly a one form of that spiritual imperative, and one that has engaged millions and millions of people alone just on Facebook. 700-800 million
Unbelievable.
People. The sixth largest. I'm quoting something that I heard you say sometime, Ari, about it would be the sixth largest country in the world.
It's now third. Third largest country, if it were a country.
Mm-hmm. Third. We need to spend more time together. Last time I saw you, it was the sixth.
And tomorrow,
next
or the
week,
day after
it'll
tomorrow,
be the planet.
It'll be the second. Yeah.
So you say that relationships are the new currency, and to place this in the context of, that we're talking about vis-a-vis the consciousness discussion, it is really an opportunity for us to both embrace and to become aware of our resistances to vulnerability, authenticity, the collapse of boundaries of any sort of ability to create firewalls around pockets of information or secrecy that we think we want to sweep under the rug. It really is a mirror of our call to become more transparent and authentic with ourselves and each other.
Correct. I totally agree. Interestingly enough, the other day we had Valentine's Day, right? And
yeah.
I happened to see in my Facebook newsfeed, a friend of mine said, gosh, you just come back in and from candlelit dinner out with her husband or partner. And she said, just a simple status update. She says, wow, it was really alarming how many people out at dinner, couples over candlelit romantic dinners on their phones.
Oh,
on their phones. And I thought, you know what, every now and again I get real courageous and I put this bold reply out there and I just said something really, you know, I really always like to be completely respectful of where people are at, but I just said, you know something, my belief is that when people are buried in their technology, it's because of a fear of intimacy.
Oh, yeah.
They want to be real with each other. It's a safety net, right?
Well, you know, here's an interesting piece, because I've brought up before that I see young people creating cyber personalities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's been coined before, but that's the language
I've
used.
Yeah.
And they're often more comfortable with their cyber personality than they are in person.
Yeah.
But here's the part of this, and I see this kind of cutting both ways, and you can comment on this, one man's opinion, but I see the negative side of this clearly, but I also see where there is an outlet for a kind of expression that might not happen under sort of regular, let's say, teen circumstances, for example. In other words, the part of them that wants to come out, that they feel comfortable in this cyber personality, they really have no outlet for in their high school or whatever, because it wouldn't be, you know, there's no real way of doing that. So I kind of see this cutting both ways.
You know, yeah, I agree. It does go both ways. There's been studies done that absolutely prove, you know, all this internet technology and mobile technology is harming in-person relationships. I think that's BS. I think it's enhancing. Absolutely. It's creating relationships that never existed before in person. In person. I travel all over the world, do my speaking and training, and I connect with people in person whom I feel that we have known one another for years, and in many cases we have, and it's like there's a degree of intimacy there, of connection. And then it's like the only remaining thing to be done is then to meet in person. They come running up like a long-lost friend, and you make eye contact, you feel their energy, you shake their hand, press the flesh, as they say, and there really is an enhancement that we've never had before to this degree, to build those, as I call it, virtual rapport. You have this virtual rapport, you meet the person, and then it's real rapport.
That's fantastic. It really is. I hear what you're saying, and it's very powerful to me. It really is a symptom, an expression of this absolutely new and emergent sense of connection and community and communion. Where it is going to go is beyond anybody's ability to perceive and conceive, although we do have these incredible predictive people, these geniuses like you mentioned, Mark Zuckerberg, and there are of course many others, who are able to peer a little farther down the trail and be ahead of the curve. But what it means for us as human beings, as what it means in terms of the development of consciousness, is monumental and is a work in progress. It's happening, unfolding in real time. And there are these connections that are being made that are, and I think this refers back to what you were saying. I was teasing you earlier, Freeman, but you were speaking to architectures that are being modeled in the virtual world that very much similar to the kinds of if not literally then certainly poetically they are similar to the neural nets in the way our own brains fire.
Absolutely.
The whole idea of hypertext is really the way human beings think. We go from one thought which suggests another thought and string them together. So there is something spectacular, and I want you to comment on a little bit about that and where you think this is going and how you have managed to find balance in it for yourself, to be a leader of it and to find balance in it for yourself and for others.
Oh, the holy grail.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the balance is a daily work in progress. I'll come back to that. But right now, in terms of where we're headed, I get so excited about this because exactly as you just said, Barnett, I mean, if we go back, you know, 5, 10 years, or, well, Facebook came out in 2004, so let's go back 10 years with pre-social media, pre-social networking, it was just a completely different world. Businesses could hide behind their ivory towers and politicians and everything, you know, and they could have this whole them and us attitude, and now they just can't. There is no getting away with anything. And so, but then that's on one hand, that's from like a business standpoint, from a human being and that neural networks in our brains, as you were just talking about, and how we tend to think in non-linear. I was in a conference last April in Norway, and a fellow speaker, Brian Eisenberg, he was sharing, he does some really cool like high-tech presentations, and he was showing some of the stuff that's coming in the future. So imagine this, that you get up in the morning, you're brushing your teeth, you're looking into the mirror, your regular bathroom mirror, but that's no ordinary mirror. That is a computer that you can have, you swipe, the same technology that you use on your iPad or iPhone, and touchscreen technology. As you're brushing your teeth, you're swiping, you're reading the morning news, you're checking your tweets, you're seeing what your Facebook friends are up to, and then you go off about your day. Similarly, like TV technology, where you have the virtual reality, and you go shopping, you're trying on a garment, click a few buttons, hit the remote, trying on a garment, press a button, you share it with a friend. What do you think? You know, does this make me look fat? Should I get this? You press a button and you order it, right, you know, right from your living room chair. So I just think that where we're headed, we literally have 24 hours a day. That's the great equalizer. Every human being on the planet, 24 hours a day. And I think what's happening with the development and evolution of technology, the internet, mobile, and the social connection aspect of it, is that we are looking for how to maximize and optimize every single waking moment of our time.
Wow.
You know?
Now, listen, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got kind of two pieces, directions I'm willing to go. One is I want to talk about goodwill as the new bottom line, because we've talked a little about the transparency piece, which I think is really important, and where, you know, there's an accountability because your customers can tweet something or post something, and very quickly, you know, it can be either a really positive or a really negative thing for your business, the kind of upside and downside with that. And then the idea also of self-distraction. Those are two of my pieces. I'm sure Barnett has others.
We
are excited to continue the conversation.
We will be right back after, as we used to say, a word from our sponsors.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we are back on Cutting Edge Consciousness. This is Barnett Bain with my co-host, Freeman Michaels, and our guest, Mari Smith. Before the break, Freeman, you had a menu. You had a Chinese menu.
Well, I had a couple of things I want to chat about.
Yeah, I want dinner number three. Why don't we chat about dinner number three?
Well, here's what I came to, and I don't feel like I'm ahead of the curve on this. In fact, I probably everyone is going, duh, but I was in San Francisco, and I went, and I use Yelp a lot, which is a way of just checking people's comments. I do this when I travel, of course. I use the travel sites to see what people say about various, you know, hotels or cities or whatever.
Stuff.
I was in San Francisco, and I wanted a yoga place, and so I just pulled up a yoga place. I found it. I went and had a great experience, and then when I got home, I decided to give my own review of it and share that on Facebook. And when I shared it on Facebook, all these people were commenting on it. And fortunately, a friend of mine happened to be in San Francisco at the same time, and he said, hey, I'm in San Francisco, let's meet. So that was really a nice little benefit of that. But I really realized goodwill is the new bottom line. Like, at no time in history, and it's interesting because it's on a balance sheet. You know, on a balance sheet, goodwill is one of the line items, and it's given a dollar figure.
What can you give?
Yes.
It becomes the bottom line, more so than what can I get and how can I manipulate.
Well, and reputation and what the quality is in something. It's quality driven. And so, again, you know, I thought about the publicity that I generated in not only writing a review on Yelp, but then in posting it to Facebook, and then all the half a dozen people that commented and the dozen or more people that liked it. That's huge, Mari, isn't it?
It is massive. It is massive. Gary Vaynerchuk is a friend of mine. He's a fellow social media ninja evangelist, has an agency out in New York. So Gary said that, you know, social media is basically word of mouth on steroids.
Yes.
It's exactly as you just did, Freeman. You know, you had a nice experience, and conversely, when people have a less than positive experience, they can go out and tell hundreds of people, friends.
Thousands. It lasts forever.
It can turn into thousands, exactly. And so, you know, they use this term influencers now, and they all these different ways of labeling how people, you know, how many reach. Reach is another term coming out. So, you know, I love what you said about quality-driven and about reputation. I always think, like, I'm a personality-based brand. You know, I protect my reputation fiercely. And I always think that integrity, to me, integrity is doing the right thing, even when nobody's watching. So I know I can always sleep peacefully at night, knowing there's never anything out on the internet under my control anyway, that I have actually, you know, clicked a button or written about or replied to somebody that's in any way, shape, or form something that I, you know, I can't live with. And before I post anything, I always ask myself, you know, am I comfortable with this being found in a Google search or splashed across a big billboard or New York Times, big major newspaper, or proud of my own mom to see. And so with that filter, I know I can keep my reputation impeccable. At the same time, you've got major brands, the businesses, restaurants you're mentioning, and hotels. an awful lot of that is out of their control. And but they have to, as a company, they have to have these internal social media policies. They have to do some intense training with their older employees, from the janitor to the CEO, to understand how their company utilizes these social technologies and how they're managing their own reputation. So really jumping in there promptly and courteously and fixing things when a customer has a complaint, you know?
Well, you are not only a pundit vis-a-vis the area of social network, you are also a very highly sought-after consultant in this space. Mm-hmm. And you work with various and many major corporations. And what is the first thing that you advise when you come in to an organization, when you are working with IT, or let's broom past that, when you work with the executive suite of a major corporation and you are assessing what their needs are and informing them of what their interests, where their interests might lie, what they might want to put some attention toward. What are the kinds of areas that you typically turn to?
Well, obviously all of this has to tie to business goals, and ultimately what we want to measure is, are they making more sales, or are they saving costs in customer service and production, etc. And a third area to measure might be brand sentiment. How does the public at large feel about their brand? And that their reputation, those kinds of things. But ultimately, for the CEO, the CFO, they want to know, how is this impacting our bottom line? And because it's kind of hard to wrap our head around, and for many years now, a lot of companies have been, a lot of social media consultants, and it's kind of a free-for-all for many years, a big shakeout now, and it's really companies are obviously hiring trusted advisors and consultants and experts. You can't go to the CEO, the main executive suite, and say, oh, you got, 50 retweets today and you grew your fan base by, 100 new fans. Like, okay, so what? Show me the money. How does that impact our bottom line? So there's many, many different pieces and layers that have to go in place. And one of the first things we would do after doing a clean sweep of seeing where their entire online presence is at right now is finding out who's responsible for being what we call the CLO. The CLO is a chief listening officer.
Mm-hmm.
And that, all that person's job is, and a lot of people, they just bring in an intern or a junior member of staff, fair enough, but never have an intern or junior member of staff being like the voice and face of your company and responding to tweets and doing all the moderating on the fan page. That has to be somebody who's extremely knowledgeable about the company, the products, the culture, what they can and can't say. But ultimately, a CLO is the person where there are some tremendous systems out there that have these full-on dashboards and literally like Command Central with all these computer screens, and you're going to tap in to see what's being said about the company, the brand, the staff, the experience, the customer service, anywhere, anytime online through Twitter, Facebook, like you mentioned, Yelp. Now we've got this Pinterest that's going nuts right now. And then what to do and how to respond. So, there's many, many companies. Radiant 6, numeral 6, they're one of the leaders in this area of the social dashboards and listening technologies and at enterprise level. So there's many choices out there, but that's certainly one.
I love the title Chief Listening Officer, and I like it, though, from a slightly different vantage point.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because you may or may not know this, but Barnett has been, obviously he's got the creativity piece. It's something we talk about a lot and work with together, but he's been hired by a number of companies to come in and help with creativity because they're realizing that innovation and the ability to respond quickly in a world that's changing so rapidly is really critical. And I have been hired to come in and do some executive coaching by a consultant who really said, look, to the CEO of this company, you have to look at your situation more systemically, that there's a holistic approach where this integrity piece, which you mentioned earlier, is there's some flaws in the whole business culture. This company is still caught a little bit in command and control management style, and it's not promoting the kind of, dare I say, energetic quality that emits a bright, shiny face and a happy message. And they know that. And so there's almost as if they can't control it even on the social media side because it's going to leak out. And they're looking now at doing some executive coaching to try to bring their people into more coherence and into a level of integrity, which for me means integrated, by the way, where we really are allowed to take these sides of ourselves and develop into more of a whole person, or dare I say, a whole company. Do you know what I'm speaking about?
Oh, it's beautiful. 100% agree. What's really cool is social media as an industry per se is evolving to become social business.
Right.
What a social business looks like is that the entire internal workings of the company has that element. Many of these elements we've been discussing today about that transparency and authenticity, and they're open, and you don't pass by somebody in the office corridor, hallway, and just kind of like ignore them or whatever. You know something about them. People are genuinely going out their way to befriend one another, and there's this cohesiveness, as you mentioned, wonderful connectedness within the company, and that culture automatically spills out to the public. And a classic example of this is Zappos, Tony Hsieh, wonderful human being. Had the great blessing to meet him and share the stage with him at 5 different times over the years. And his entire company, he's the CEO, obviously they were bought out by Amazon, but he's still there as a CEO, and he built it with the founder of the company based upon these 10 core values, which created this culture of what I see as extreme mutual respect. Like, everybody in that company is important. They're allowed to express their creativity and fun, and then obviously that is reflected in an extremely successful billion-dollar company.
It's huge.
There's a huge paradox that is looming toward us very quickly. People are increasingly becoming fried around their tech. And the new frontier is likely to be a desire for the human touch.
Mm.
And there's going to, and I know you have thoughts about this, and so I invite you to comment, there's going to have to be some innovative response that resolves the inherent paradox of we are a wired society that longs for a human one-on-one touch.
Mm. Yes, 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 I totally agree. Facebook fatigue, we call it.
Facebook fatigue.
Just recently I was at a conference here in San Diego last week, and this guy did a presentation and he used an example of New Zealand Air, or Air New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant initiative. They have this where, say you book a flight at New Zealand Air, they know who's going to be your flight attendant. That person's name goes into this custom email, and you start interacting with your own flight attendant who has a picture and a name. It's like, talk about humanizing the brand. And it literally helps that piece you're talking about. We crave for that connection. So you get on the flight and, Jeannie's your flight attendant and greets you by first name. You greet her by first name. And
you've already seen pictures of her kids.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, I mean, this is it. Is that it's the whole world becoming very,
right.
I mean, obviously, this thing cuts both ways. But I'm with you in the excitement, and especially in terms of companies becoming more let me think of the word, because it's a level of accountability and responsibility. But it's not just transparency. The tech companies do this really well, and they've modeled this where, they get the best people because people want to work at Google or Yahoo or whatever. And it's so interesting that it's even in competing for the best talent that you have at this level of transparency, that people can look through you and say, wow, is that a company I want to work for?
Mm-hmm.
So I see this seeping through at sort of all levels, where a lot of what could be hidden in the shadows is now facing the light, for better or worse. And for me, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And I think that I love that you brought up the word transparency, because something I've used for many, many years. And then not long ago, maybe in about the last 6 or 8 months, I began to hear this new term called selective transparency.
Nice.
Oh,
selective transparency.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you unpack that a little bit for us, selective transparency?
Well, as an individual, people are saying, okay, so I go to my Facebook profile, and I'm very open. I'm pretty much all my settings is open, especially since they released the subscribe option last September, which means you can have, it's kind of like friending anybody. It's like opening up, it used to be 5,000, you still can only have 5,000 friends. But you can also have an unlimited number of subscribers, which means they can sign up to get your public post, anything you share to public. So I'm pretty open. But there are certain areas in my life I will never talk about on the Internet.
Yes.
I talk about my health. I never talk about my romantic life, my relationships. People have no clue about that, and that's private. I'm not going to share it online. Mm-hmm. Share that with my close friends. So that's what I interpret to be selective transparency. You know, I'm just not going to live in a glass house. I'm very strategic.
We are running towards the end of our time, but before, there's a couple of things I want to cover beforehand. First of all, we want to know, we want to give you an opportunity to share a little bit about where you're going to be and what you're going to do, but also this issue of transparent, how did you call it?
Selective
transparency. This is an enormous piece. This is a huge contribution.
Which ought to be taught in high schools and colleges. We both have 22 and 23-year-old children.
So I want to encourage you to come back on the air with us.
We can just
and
do that
to
topic,
spend
frankly.
The entire show talking about selective transparency, and I think that this is a conversation that needs to be built out into a very, very public message. So before we do that, we want you to just share with our listeners where they can learn more about Mari Smith and where they can contact you and what you're up to, where you're going to be.
Thank you so much.
In 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You have more than that. Come on now.
It's really easy. Mari Smith, M-A-R-I, Mari Smith, just Google me. I'm at marismith.com, facebook.com/Mari Smith, twitter.com/Mari Smith. They can find out my book is on Amazon, The New Relationship Marketing. It's in any bookstores. They can get a free chapter at thenewrelationshipmarketing.com or just find it from my website. And I love to connect with people. It really, really was a pleasure to be on your show, guys, today.
More than a pleasure.
We loved having you. We can't wait to have you again live in person.
And we, yes,
that is, that's usually how live works, isn't it?
Well, you know.
Live and in person.
Now you can do it live over the Internet. See that? We can't Skype.
Thank you for saving me on that one.
Yeah, I tried. You didn't shave me earlier. You threw me right. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you could bank it. I owe you one.
Hey, Mari, listen, thanks so much. Again, folks, the book is The New Relationship Marketing by Mari Smith. We thank you, Mari, for coming on the show. We invite you all to check this out, and we invite you all to stay tuned, because we'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with my co-host, Barnett Bain.
At the edge of possibility. Well, there was a lot of possibilities that got rolled forward there. Selective transparency.
Important.
If that is not a message that should be, if that is not one of the preeminent public service message opportunities that I've heard in a very long time, then nothing is.
Well, and so much of that conversation gets me stirred up. I mean, the idea that bad behavior now is far more dramatic than it once was, and this is internal behavior, whether it's companies or individuals who don't have things sorted out in their own lives, and it kind of ekes out or leaks out in ways. And you see it showing up in things that they
eeks and leaks. I like that language.
It's a big deal. And so I think the call, one man's opinion, is to really be clear about what we're putting out and what we're drawing in. I mean, it goes back to our sort of fundamental conversation here, Barnett, about how we own our own experience and really start to track what is it we want to be relating in the world.
We have a conversation that has very much to do with everything to do with responsibility. We define it as the ability to respond to the challenges of life. And one, maybe the preeminent expression of that is the stewardship of our own behaviors. It's a sense of accountability And when we become aware of our own actions in the world, we begin to have preferably some maturity about them, about the impact that they have on others, as well as the impact that some of our actions and behaviors have on ourselves. Begin to live a little bit more from a place of that is a little more seasoned, and the social media universe dramatically enhances,
amplifies.
That's the word. It dramatically amplifies both the stakes and the arena for responsibility.
It's great.
Beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And so, again, we can look at this as individuals, and we can look at this, let's say, in a business model of, you know, is a kind of willingness to look at how, what are sort of the directorial agreements that are showing up in my experience? Like, what's really happening? Who am I deep down that's sort of coming out in these ways that I need to really own and take responsibility for? And then I need to orient towards, who do I want to be? You know, and again, I can think of this in terms of a company. Company saying, okay, we get where we sort of, here's where we, you know, our trailing bits as a company and how it kind of shows up in negative ways. But who do we want to be? And then out of that, that spawns certain choices. And then again, going back to the work that you and I talk about a lot, it can spawn practices. And so, you know, we have said, you have said many times, we're moving from sort of best practices to next practices. And as we as individuals or in these groupings kind of imagine, where do we want to go? There may or may not be. We have to develop the practices. We have to design them.
We are becoming more and more consciously participatory our subconscious. And social media is a map of our individual and social, our individual and collective subconscious. So I only have to go on to my own Facebook page to see a map of my subconscious writ large. It is a full expression of my interests, both integrated and disintegrated, my intentions both above the board and under the table. And this is really the case systemically, right across the warp and weave of social media.
Fantastic.
It is the subconscious pumped up.
Amplified.
So we are not presented with challenges beyond our ability to rise to them. But this is certainly a call to become aware of what is going along below the surface of our happy-go-luckiness.
Yeah. What's leaking out? What aspects of us
leaking or eking is how you put it. I like that better.
And sometimes leaping.
Leaking,
sometimes
yes.
It's dramatic. And we need to own that stuff. You know, it's one of the other things, too, and I'm sorry if I'm segueing a bit, but I think it's critical, because you had said about the selective transparency. And again, as the father of a 23-year-old and I as the stepfather of a 24-year-old, she's 24 now. Happy birthday, Sophie. We know that a lot of things that are quite public, there may be a way that we look at the stuff that our kids put out and go, you might want to check that. And that's, of course, a developmental thing. But one of the beauties of this, and you and
well,
I
when we, you
about
and
this,
I were adolescents,
we would have done the same
when
thing.
We acted up.
Yeah.
We acted up whatever was going on.
It was four square blocks. That's as far as it would go.
however we acted out, it was contained in time and space.
It was
not memorialized
infinitely.
In cyberspace.
Well, this is the upside of this.
This is the same as the tattoo discussion that you and I have laughed about in the past, is that back in the day when we wore bell bottoms or elephant pants, we did not have them surgically stapled to our ankles. These fashions come and they go.
That's great.
The impulsive nature of where we are developmentally.
That's the piece, though. This is the big piece, though, is that what I want to see happen out of this is a tolerance for developmental stages. Because, look, we have... I should just own this. I find myself reacting very strongly to developmental stages I haven't known what to do with. And so when I see it showing up in ways that I go, ah,
I know it's not an adjective, but it's better than yippee.
I did yippee the other day. Almost got fired for that one. The idea, though, that I can really own that piece personally and have tons of compassion for these developmental stages. You know, because again, it's like if you think about one of the great parent discussions is, well, you know, you're going to need a job someday, so you don't want to put that out. Well, now I see companies, as they become more transparent, accept the stages of people who they might hire, that this whole thing opens up in a particular way. And we do have a level of, it wasn't just transparency, it's a kind of honesty or a realness that is gracious and that is opening and compassionate. That's the world I want to live in, and that's what I see us moving towards. Because the idea that the teenager is going to make wonky decisions, there's another word for you, they're going to make developmentally appropriate decisions.
Some of those developmentally appropriate decisions will be positive and constructive, and some of them will be negatively disintegrative, but they were nonetheless... What they have in common is they are rooted in a developmentally appropriate consciousness. We have a friend, Chip Conley, who's going to be with us at some point in the near future, who's written a book. I can't remember. Chip's going to kill us, but I can't remember the name of the book. But it's a wonderful book.
Yeah.
And it has to do with framing this kind of developmental consciousness from the perspective of businesses, just as you were just speaking. And he uses as the framework, as the portal into the discussion, he uses the Maslow's hierarchy of needs and unpacks that in such a way that corporations can understand where they are in terms of meeting their own needs developmentally and seeing the difficulty that they have perhaps of being able to turn their attentions to creativity, for example, when they're still not quite comfortable with the basics of safety and security.
That's
you can't
huge.
Really do. You can't really. We laugh. You know, increasingly we use this term, premature transcendence syndrome. Mm. You can't really leapfrog
can't
past something
no.
when there are these anchors that we are dragging around. So.
It's a great piece, too, because business as an expression of developmental stages, and again, I'm going to use the collective only in that it reflects back to me the pieces of me that I can recognize still need picking up. So in the collective experience, we see business expressing, reflecting our subconscious stuff and our developmental stages and the pieces that need to be picked up. And so the more it's in the command and control paradigm and the more it's rooted in reactions, fear-based reactions to things, the more I see it reflect the fact that we go, oh, I know that part in me. And I see it so clearly represented in businesses that are, at this
vertical,
moment in time,
linear.
And that is the law of diminishing return. That paradigm is becoming less and less effective, and it's being replaced by these, many times these tech companies are modeling this, but other companies as well, where they're showing that there's a whole new way of
Zappos.
Relating.
Mari was referring to Tony Hsieh's company Zappos.
Yes.
And
great example.
That is a great example of the distinction between what used to be called a red pen company and a blue pen company. A little less no, a little less my way or the highway, and much more of a sense of collegial meaning and purpose. Is that a signal for 4 minutes? I mean,
yeah, it is a signal for 4 minutes. So you have 4 minutes to complete that thought, Burnett. No, that's not true. Yeah, no, but I can't
sign my name in 4 minutes. Yeah.
That's right. Try going out to lunch with Barnett and getting the check. No, he never gets the check. I'm just kidding. this piece about the way that the business evolving and so many aspects of our experience evolving, and it actually harkens back to again how every time there's a shift it drags with it both sides. We see these incredible positive potentialities, and we see these trailing bits of where, you know, at Valentine's Day, folks are out on their PDAs, you know, Twittering when their spouse or whoever's right across from them, and oftentimes they're
their values show.
But here's what's happening: they're twittering about how what a great time they're having on Valentine's Day. I've been guilty of this, like, oh, I'm wandering and wondering when I could be out wandering and wondering, as opposed to twittering about it. I don't Twitter, but Facebooking or something about it. That there's this way of, you know, kind of projecting onto things versus experiencing them. And that's okay, because sometimes we say it first and then say, well, wait, I want to be more authentic with that, and I want to...
Well, we're not participating. We're not in our lives.
Right.
We are not fully in our bodies anyway. For the most part, we are functioning. We use those to carry our heads around, our brains around. But even to the degree that we're in our brains, we're less in our brains now than we were before. I heard George... a George Clooney interview a little while ago, and it was he said a wonderful thing about noticing more and more he's on press junkets or on red carpets, and people come up to him from behind their cell phones because they're filming him all the time.
Right.
So he says, so rarely does anybody actually come up and meet me. They always come up and they're filming me, and they're usually sending back something that says, I just met George Clooney. But of course he didn't meet George Clooney because they had this barrier of recording the device in between. Yeah. We are more and more estranged from what is occurring in the present moment. And the flip side of that is that we have the opportunity to see through it and to break that trance more cleanly and efficiently and effectively than ever before, because it is so becoming so paramountly obvious. So it is an opportunity to set many, many people free.
That's brilliant. It's brilliant. I had a thought. I won't go into it because it's too long of a thought. But just about, I can say it in a minute, the whole idea of projecting on the celebrities, because you and I have spent some time around celebrities, and there's a... and it's so interesting to watch the whole projecting game in my own experience personally, and then again having been a soap star for a minute and watching everyone project onto me. It's funny, when I used to do the interviews, I would listen to the questions. That's what the article was about. It really didn't matter what I said. I mean, I could really try to like take a question and bend it to get to what I wanted to get to, but it never worked, because, you know, soap magazines aren't going to be about like anything that I want to talk about. You'd be like, what my favorite color is, what movie do I like, tell me about a girlfriend or something that's intriguing, you know. But it's not about me, it's about this projection onto me. And I think about that, you know, there's a few celebrities who I know in some capacity, and how I know them in that capacity. People always ask me, well, who are they really like? I'm like, I don't know. I know the guy is the father of so-and-so, and our kids play together. He seems like a nice enough guy, but I don't know him. I'm not doing that major projection. Anyhow, that's just a side thought that came on the George Clooney heels. With that, unfortunately, I
think we're out of time.
Yeah, we have to say goodbye. Mari was amazing. Again, for folks, the book is The New Relationship Marketing. We encourage you to check that out. We also encourage you to share this show if you enjoyed it. And we encourage you to keep coming back to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Thanks for listening.